All right. Welcome in, everyone. We're diving into some fascinating material today.
Definitely looking forward to this one. Always appreciate the chance to unpack some complex legal issues.
Absolutely. And this case, United States v. Brendan Allen Shaw, Sixth Circuit, 2006. Oh boy, does it deliver on complexity. We've got the sources you all sent in and our mission today. Cut through it all, get to the heart of the matter.
Sounds good to me.
Really, the big question here is the Fourth Amendment, right? When does a child's accusation and that alone justify an arrest? Like, where's that line?
Yeah, and it's never straightforward, is it? You've got the absolute imperative to protect children. We all agree on that.
Of course, of course.
But then you've got these fundamental constitutional protections that everyone is entitled to. So where do those two sometimes competing interests, how do they actually balance out? Shaw really gets into the weeds on that.
No doubt. And the players in this whole situation. Well, you've got Brendan Shaw, he was 19 at the time, 11th grade education, working as a live-in babysitter. And then the 3-year-old boy who accused him of sexual abuse. Now, right off the bat, the fact that the Sixth Circuit overturned the district court's finding of probable cause, that sends up some red flags, doesn't it?
A huge red flag there. Tells you right away the appellate court had some serious concerns. Like, hang on, did we even meet that constitutional bar to make this arrest in the first place?
Exactly. So let's break it down step by step. We're in June 2004. The 3-year-old's mother, Angie Shaw, again, mention here, she's Brendan's cousin, takes her son to the hospital, alleges Brendan abused him. But here's the thing, and this is straight from the sources. The medical exam, no physical evidence of abuse, none.
And that right there, that's a cornerstone of the whole problem. If you don't have that physical corroboration, what are you basing the arrest on? Makes you question the whole foundation of what law enforcement did next.
Right. But despite that lack of physical evidence, military police arrested Brendan. And get this, they apparently didn't even tell him why they were arresting him. Just, you're coming with us.
Oh, yeah, that's going to be a problem. You can't just yank someone into custody without at least a basic explanation. It's their right to know why they're being deprived of their freedom. That's Fourth Amendment 101.
So they hold him for almost 20 hours. 20 hours. And during that time, he's interrogated over and over. Eventually, he signs 3 confessions. But when you look at Brendan's background, like the sources lay out, he was young, just 19, limited education, held overnight, probably exhausted. It paints a picture, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Age, education, the whole interrogation environment, those are all crucial factors when you're trying to determine if a confession is actually voluntary. The law recognizes that people in certain situations are just more susceptible to pressure during questioning. So you got to layer that on top of the question of whether the arrest itself was even legal to begin with.
It makes you wonder, right? Like, shouldn't they have at least interviewed the child? Or tried to find some other evidence before they just went and made the arrest based solely on the mother's word. It feels like a pretty big step to skip.
You're hitting on the key Fourth Amendment point here. The majority on the Sixth Circuit, they were very clear. Just taking the mom's account of what a 3-year-old said, without doing any independent digging to see if there was anything to back it up, that's simply not enough for probable cause. Not even close.
And that's where the legal meat of this whole thing lies. So the Sixth Circuit, they looked at 3 main questions. One, like we've been talking about, was there even probable cause for the arrest? That's Fourth Amendment territory. Two, were the confessions actually voluntary? Fifth Amendment stuff right there.
Right.
And 3, there was this issue about how long it took to get Brendan in front of a judge, procedural due process kind of stuff.
Got it. So let's stick with that Fourth Amendment question for a sec, because that's the linchpin of the whole ruling, right? What's important for everyone listening to understand is that the standard for probable cause is pretty clear. You need information you can reasonably trust. And based on that information, a prudent person would have to believe a crime actually happened. The Sixth Circuit, the majority, they just didn't buy it. They said, nope, the word of a 3-year-old relayed through the mother with nothing else, no physical evidence, no interview with the child, that's not going to cut it.
Makes sense. The court really hammered home that no one even talked to the kid directly. But there was that dissenting judge, right? He saw things a little differently.
Oh, yeah. Judge Sutton had a different take. He said the mom's report seemed believable, and Brendan was the live-in babysitter, meaning he had access to the child. Judge Sutton thought that was enough for a reasonable person to believe something had gone wrong. His view was, we shouldn't create this special higher bar for probable cause just because it's a child abuse case.
But the majority pushed back on that pretty hard. They worried that if you said an arrest is okay based on nothing but an accusation, especially from a really young child, without checking it out at all, you're opening the door to a lot of problems. people getting arrested wrongfully based on flimsy information.
Yeah, they were drawing a line in the sand. They were saying, look, protecting kids is massively important, but it doesn't wipe away the Constitution. We can't just toss out these fundamental rights that are meant to stop the government from overstepping.
So let me get this straight. The majority opinion was basically saying that the three-year-old's statement by itself was unreliable.
They weren't saying the child was lying, but they were pointing out some really important things to think about. When you're dealing with a very young child, can they even remember things accurately? Could they be easily influenced by someone else? And you can't put them under oath, can you? All those things made the court hesitant to say, okay, that's enough to arrest someone. That's why having some kind of corroboration, something to back up the child's statement, is so crucial.
Fascinating stuff. Okay, so then we get to the confessions. Why were those tossed out, even though Brendan was read his Miranda rights?
That's where the fruit of the poisonous tree doctrine comes in. It's a classic legal concept. The court basically said the arrest itself was bad, right? No probable cause.
Right.
So anything they got because of that bad arrest, like the confessions, those are tainted too. Even with the Miranda warnings, it's like the original illegal act poisoned everything that came after it.
So simple terms for our listeners, no good arrest, no good concession. Even if you read someone their rights, doesn't fix the problem of how it all started.
Exactly. And on top of that, remember the whole interrogation situation. Nearly 20 hours, young guy, not much education, probably sleep deprived. The court didn't flat out say the confessions were coerced, but they definitely raised an eyebrow at those circumstances. It all adds to the sense that things weren't exactly kosher.
Right, right. Now let's circle back to that dissenting opinion. What was Judge Sutton's main beef with the majority's take?
Well, he thought they were creating a special exception for child abuse cases when it comes to probable cause. He argued that the standard should be the same across the board. And in his view, the mother's report plus Brendan's access to the child met that standard.
He thought there was enough there for a reasonable person to believe something happened.
Right. And he believed that demanding more evidence in these types of cases would actually make it harder to protect children, which is, of course, a big concern.
But the majority, they pushed back pretty hard, didn't they? They were really worried about setting a precedent where any accusation without any kind of independent verification could lead to an arrest.
They did. They argued that even though protecting children is vital, it can't come at the expense of basic constitutional rights. They were trying to balance those two very important interests.
This is a tough one, isn't it? Trying to find that balance.
Yeah, oh, it definitely is.
So for anyone listening, especially those of you studying law, what are the big takeaways from United States v. Brendan Allenshaw?
I'd say there are two really important things to remember. First, in these types of cases, especially with child abuse allegations, corroboration is key. Getting that independent verification is crucial before you slap the cuffs on someone.
So don't just jump to an arrest based on an accusation alone. Got it.
Exactly. And second, the specifics of the suspect, their age, their education, how they were questioned, all of that plays a big role in whether a confession will hold up in court. Even if you read them their Miranda rights, a bad arrest can taint everything that follows.
Wow. This case really illustrates how tricky it can be to navigate the legal system, doesn't it? Trying to protect everyone involved while still upholding the Constitution.
Absolutely. There's a lot to unpack here.
Yeah. And for all you law students out there, think about the dissent's point of view for a moment. When you're dealing with a possible child abuse situation, how do you move quickly enough to potentially protect a child, but also make sure you're respecting everyone's rights? It's a tough question with no easy answers. Something to keep wrestling with, for sure. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive, everyone.
Really appreciate the conversation.
Absolutely. We'll see y'all next time.